The Kremlin accuses Ukraine and the West of violating the Minsk agreements. It says the government in Kyiv is committing genocide in the Donbas region, while the West sends offensive weapons to the country. On the other hand, the West claims Russia intends to invade Ukraine. The Minsk agreements were signed in 2014 and 2015 to secure a ceasefire between the Ukrainian government and pro-Russian forces in the east of Ukraine. The Kremlin has repeatedly expressed concern about NATO's eastward expansion, demanding a ban on Ukraine's admission to the military alliance. So far, the US and its NATO allies have only blown on calls by ignoring Russia's concerns and its requests for security guarantees.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip staged a sit-in to support Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails and detention centers. During the sit-in, people shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded the release of all Palestinian prisoners. Palestinian prisoners are political prisoners, and they are regarded as heroes and freedom fighters by all Palestinians.
The suffering of Palestinian prisoners has increased in recent months, especially following the bold escape operation in September. Prisoners, including women and children, suffer every day inside Zionist jails. The Zionist crimes against the prisoners must stop.
The sit-in comes at a time when hundreds of Palestinian detainees have been denied proper medical treatment in Israeli jails. Over 200 Palestinian detainees have died in Israeli prisons since 1967. During a press conference outside the Red Cross office, the Palestinian Ministry of Health condemned Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinian prisoners, especially those suffering from chronic medical conditions.
For Palestinian inmates, Israeli prisons serve as gateways towards their death because of medical negligence. Currently, there are 700 very sick Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli prisons without proper medical care. Those sick prisoners are dying slowly as the world watches in silence.
Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers where they are denied basic human rights. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas demanded international protection for Palestinian prisoners.
We call on the Red Cross and all international organizations to help Palestinian prisoners, especially those who are sick in Zionist jails. We demand international protection for Palestinian prisoners. They are suffering because of the racist Zionist practices.
People here are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, there are thousands of Palestinian prisoners suffering in Israeli prisons under inhumane detention conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The third edition of the annual conference on Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, dubbed General Soleimani and New Islamic Civilization. The conference was held online this time, with 50 scholars and political pundits from across the world giving speeches.
General Qasem Soleimani is a martyr, and he died fighting the head choppers and the throat slitters, and a brave, a charismatic leader. And we all honor his life.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism and the guarantor of regional stability. Should Iran and Russia have sat on their hands and not defeated the terrorists in Syria and Iraq, they would have had to fight them in their own soils.
We know that the U.S. and some other countries used terrorism under the banner of religion to topple the Syrian government and move the battlefield to Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, and the entire region. But Soleimani shattered all the U.S.'s calculations.
Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations.
The security of the Zionist regime is an important issue for all of the American governments. What General Soleimani did was to put Palestine in top of the Muslim world's priorities. And then he gathered and united all of the groups that opposed Israeli occupation as the resistance axis. This was the major motive for the U.S. to assassinate him.
Iran and Iraq have set up joint investigation committee on General Soleimani's assassination. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
Iranian and Iraqi judicial teams are seriously following up on a legal pursuit to bring the culprits to justice. Iraq is where the assassination took place and has so far kept close cooperation with Iran. In the four-day conference, we're also going to discuss legal dimensions of Soleimani's assassination.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists.
General Soleimani's assassination gave a clear clue about who is who in the fight against terrorism in the region. The United States killed the nemesis of Daesh, and that puts Washington on the terrorists' team. This, as Iran is firmly following up on its legal pursuit to bring the perpetrators to justice, saying this is to make sure that such incidents will not happen again against Iranian military figures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Cleaning up the mess left behind by Storm Eunice that battered the UK this week. With record speeds of nearly 200 kilometers per hour, much of the country from Scotland to England felt the force of the storm's temper. Footage posted to social media showed trees fall, history be realigned, railway travel disrupted, planes struggling to land, iconic landmarks damaged. The capital, London, issued its first ever rat severe weather warning. Here, too, authorities asked residents not to leave home.
So the message to Londoners is, whilst the Met Office has the red weather warning, stay indoors. A storm Eunice is the worst storm we've faced in 3 decades. It's really important we don't inadvertently put ourselves in harm's way by being outdoors.
Many heeded the warning and stayed home. Others did not. 3 people were killed.
One of those killed, a woman in her 30s, traveling in a car with a man of the same age here in North London when this tree fell onto their vehicle, killing her, but sparing her partner.
Eunice knocked out electricity for tens of thousands of households on its path. The government had already been warned that the UK lacks the resilience to deal with storms, particularly in terms of electricity infrastructure. Here in London, there is a sense of worry about what's to come next.
I guess you're just not really used to it happening, and I guess it's just one of those things that's going to happen more often, and we need to do more to be prepared to deal with them.
I'd say it's quite concerning because it kind of makes me think of the bigger picture of where the entire climate is headed, where we're headed as a species.
Everything was just in disarray. It was crazy and chaotic, and yeah, I know a lot of people felt scared.
Eunice was predicted to be the first storm in 30 years and certainly won't be the last. The clear-up phase is well underway now, but the wider debate about the state of the UK's resilience against storms is only just gathering pace. Saeed Pourreza, London.
On Friday, school pupils held protests in over 40 cities across Italy demanding the government to put an end to obligatory work placements in the last 3 years of school. The demonstrations were staged after a student, 16-year-old Giuseppe Lenoci, died in a road accident on Monday while he was on board a truck for a school work internship. Last month, another student, 18-year-old Lorenzo Perrelli, was crushed to death by a steel girder of 150 kilos while working in an internship for a private company.
È una vergogna.
They should be ashamed. School principals should be reported to the authorities for striking deals with private companies without being provided assurances on working conditions in factories. They have been reckless and should be punished.
Lavoro non pagato, praticamente sfruttamento.
Schoolwork internship is equivalent to unpaid work. It is just another form of exploitation. In most cases, it doesn't give anything to students. It only helps companies make more profit.
About 3,000 students gathered in central Rome demanding the government to remove the education minister and scrap obligatory work experience programs for high school students introduced by former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi in 2015. In Turin, tension and anger went out of control when a group of students tried to break into the local headquarters of industrial employers group Confindustria and were repelled by police with some batons being wielded, with at least 7 officers being hurt.
We are staging protests also to raise awareness over our living conditions as young adults. Our generation is suffering greatly also from the anti-COVID measures, which restricts our freedom to move, to interact socially. We are left alone with our phones following school lessons online, with our psychological scars, and the government is not doing anything to help us.
School dropout levels in Italy are among the highest in the EU, and due to the pandemic, with the government quickly deciding to make all learning remote. Also, the cases of social withdrawal and self-harm among young people are on the rise. Healthcare professionals are warning. In the past 2 years, and especially in recent months, Italy has been the scene of protests across the country. Rallies have been held against deteriorating living conditions, mandatory vaccination and health passes, as well as what the protesters describe as the government's mismanagement of the COVID pandemic. Max Civili, Rome.
Dozens of Nigerian Muslims, mostly supporters of prominent cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, demonstrated in Abuja to condemn Saudi Arabia for the war on Yemen and its continued blockade of the impoverished country. They said the bombing of civilian targets by the Saudi-led coalition and its siege on Yemen has caused a serious humanitarian situation there.
A coalition of Saudi Kingdom and that of United Arab Emirates, we are launching a strike on the innocent people of Yemen. They have been killing a lot of women, children, men, and everywhere, at their houses, at their business places, hospitals, schools, everywhere. Nowhere is safe in Yemen. They are killing, and the world is silent.
The Saudi war has escalated recently as Riyadh has intensified its aerial and ground attacks, worsening the humanitarian situation in Yemen. The protesters said the ultimate goal of Saudi Arabia is to reinstate the former Yemeni president.
They want to return Mr. Hadi back to power. You can't return somebody back to power with killing those people you want him to come and rule. You are killing them and you want him back to come and do what? What is he coming back to do? To come and rule who? Innocent people or dead bodies?
The protesters said human feeling should prevail over the intrigues of the power struggle on the situation in Yemen. They added that the senseless shelling of innocent civilians in Yemen must stop, while the international community has a moral responsibility to put a stop to the carnage. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah, has called one of its most recent achievements flying an advanced drone on a 40-minute reconnaissance mission over Israel. Is this a sign that the once invincible Israeli army is not invincible anymore? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how Israel's military capabilities have not been able to shield it from the resistance group's firepower, which include Hamas, and how it would not be able to withstand a war with Hezbollah. Let's find out more about this particular development from our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, who joins us from Beirut. Well, Mariam, this particular piece of news is pretty amazing in itself. I don't know if you have details behind this drone that flew 40 minutes into Israeli airspace and back. What do we know about this?
Well, we know that it flew for, like you said, 40 minutes, but also 70 kilometers deep within territories of northern Palestine. And as you said, that with in and of itself is very significant development. Strategic experts believe that this is very significant when it comes to the actual face-off between Hezbollah and the Israelis. This is on one hand, of course, as you know, the drone was named Hassan after the founder of this unit in Hezbollah. This is a unit of experts that are basically have an expertise in building, making, and as we know right now, of course, making their own drones and maintaining and flying those drones in order to use them, of course, in any sort of combat. But now what we have is that the Israelis are taking the war towards the Hezbollah, actually, excuse me, is taking this to the Israelis themselves. But what is even more significant, we learned from the Israeli Yedioth Ahronot daily, from their website platform, that this also coincided with a maneuver that was taking place by the Israeli army, which simulated a possible Hezbollah drone attack. So that in itself, ironically, shows that Hezbollah seemed to know, first of all, about those maneuvers. Second of all, they were sending a message to the Israelis that you cannot stop our drones from actually entering. So we had the Iron Dome, we had the F-16 fighter jets. They could not intercept that drone, which could have not just been there for surveillance and reconnaissance and for spying. It could also have been for the sake of even conducting a military operation. So all of these issues put in light, and it seems that, as experts are saying, Hezbollah has taken the face-off with the Israelis to a very higher level right now.
Thank you for that, Maryam Saleh. We appreciate it. Our correspondent there from Beirut. Okay, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. We have activist and political commentator Leif Maouf joining us from Beirut. Also joining us, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Lathan, I'm going to start with you. So what are we looking at over here? A reconnaissance mission that took 40 minutes, and it was 70 kilometers. It was a drone, and it went over Israel. I mean, it couldn't get any better for Hezbollah as a success. What do you see the different, messages this sends from the capabilities to what then it means for Israel?
Let's remember that this came just a few days after the speech of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, on the commemoration of the Leader Martyrs Day. And in that speech, he warned the Zionists that the resistance in Lebanon has acquired the capabilities to upgrade all its dumb missile stockpile, the ones that are not guided missiles, and have done so, and also are capable of building their own drones, and they're ready for business to sell these drones. And so much of the jokes on the social media in Lebanon have been that this was a test run for a drone for somebody who wants to buy it from Hezbollah. So this shows you the difference in readiness between the resistance and the Zionist entity for the next war. This comes also, of course, in the speech. Sayyid Nasrallah pointed out that they activated their air defenses and that they're ready to take down any Israeli drones that cross into Lebanon. And now we have it, that warning by Sayyid Nasrallah being just pointed against the reality of Hezbollah being able to breach the airspace of the Zionist entity. The next coming war, there'll be hundreds of these drones. They'll take out all the positions of the Zionist forces in North Palestine in a minute, easily, without being taken down. And this has been shown to us by this trip with this drone, 70 kilometers. That means it almost reached Jenin in the Northwest Bank, which means that even in a war that includes Gaza, the West Bank, inside Palestine, Hezbollah could be a big factor in any next war inside Palestine, even if it doesn't spill into Lebanon.
Say, Mohsen Abbas, so you have all of that that our guest just said there on the one side, and on the other side, on the other hand, you have the fact that Israeli, whether it was their security systems or their so-called Iron Dome system or whatever other machinery or military capabilities they have, was not able to down this drone. What does that say about the Israeli apparatus as a whole?
Well, it says that steadily Israel's erstwhile propaganda and image of invincibility as a military power in the region is all but shattered. The fact is that the only superiority they now have is the nuclear one, which they don't admit, but they've got plenty of nuclear weapons. But who are they going to use those on? Hezbollah is not a conventional army. It doesn't fight in the conventional sense, although in Syria they've now acquired huge expertise, not only in terms of working with other conventional armies, but also in foreign territories, and also acquiring the skills to use the most sophisticated UAV and ballistic missile technology. Israel really is now in a total quandary, because they know that not only is the technology rapidly increasing, but they failed with all those bombing expeditions they supposedly were doing in Syria, which they no doubt they were violating. The whole purpose of those apparently was to prevent Hezbollah getting this technology or having the ability to do this. But in reality, Israel's defense mechanisms are being exposed. It's very easy now to envisage Hezbollah being able to send the UAVs in swarms to, say, for instance, Haifa, the Haifa port, and completely knocking out an entire sort of lifeline for Israel. So this has huge implications.
Well, the focus is on this Israeli Iron Dome system, so-called Iron Dome system, Leith Maruf, in one sense, as it to have failed once again, which Israel so highly touts it, the purpose and function, which obviously it's not doing what it's supposed to do. First of all, why is that happening? What does that say about the security that Israel does not have as a result of this not functioning properly?
You know, the Zionist entity is not only built on mythology that doesn't have anything to do with history of the region in terms of creating this mythology of a Jewish state. It also, most of its story that is sold to the rest of the world is mythology, including this idea that it is a strong nation with huge technological advancements. All of that is a myth. The reality is, without direct American interference, even in 1973, the Zionist entity would have collapsed in the face of the Syrian and Egyptian army at the time. So what we have right now is a fragile colony that doesn't have direct support of the army of the United States, because the U.S. is busy trying to create war with China and Russia, and the resistance is showing clearly that in this moment of exit of the Americans from Western Asia, it will be very easy to take out this colony and liberate the lands of Palestine, Syria, Lebanon from these colonists.
On the other hand, we have Hamas that I'd like to point out here, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, in which in its most recent war, we saw not only their firepower to have increased dramatically in terms of not only the number of missiles, but also it traveling further into Israel and, again, penetrating this so-called Iron Dome system, which failed to bring down all the missiles. Even according to the stats given by Israel itself, of the more than 4,360 rockets and mortar attacks by Palestinian armed groups, 3,573 penetrated Israeli airspace. So something's going on that Israel's not able to stop these missiles.
Yes, it's quite clear that the systems that they have are not adequate. They're not up to the task. We've seen this also in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia with the Yemeni Ansarullah and what they've been able to penetrate in terms of taking out American systems as well, which is where the Israelis largely have got a lot of these kind of defensive batteries, supposedly. There's also the failure of UAE. So what you're seeing is that the actual collapse of supposedly really efficient technological defense capabilities right across the region, and that's going to encourage the resistance axis hugely. I mean, the fact is that already Hezbollah proved in 2003, 2006, that actually Israel as a military unit doesn't even have the morale or the training or the willpower to be able to last beyond a handful of days. They did that with Hamas as well. They didn't dare invade. Let's not forget, even though Hamas penetrated the Iron Dome, Israel could not pluck up the courage to launch an offensive on Gaza. Now, that's just probably the weakest part of the entire resistance axis. Hezbollah is kind of obviously slightly stronger than them. 100,000 is what Sayyid Nasrallah says in terms of military boots on the ground that they have. Just recently, he pointed that after the Tayune incident. He's also made it clear that Hezbollah is now capable of seeing and observing all of the kind of defense mechanisms that Israel has, and they will surprise them. He's actually said over and over again that we will surprise you as to how much we know and what we can do. Add to this, there the defense systems that Hezbollah itself has, and they're capable of operating all sorts of light infantry and armored weaponry, of course, all the weapons that actually, the missile weapons that took out the tanks that Israel has. Israel still hasn't found solutions to those problems. And any further engagement with Hezbollah or Hamas, I think, is only going to increasingly expose just how frail they are. And don't forget, the recruits that Israel has, their own military has admitted that the soldiers they have are just not motivated or able to come up to the same levels as the resistance. I mean, you've got to really count also the individual morale and the spiritual and religious willpower of the likes of Hezbollah and the rest of the resistance axis. They have a just cause. They have a burning in their heart for liberating Al-Quds, not just as a Palestinian land, but also as a spiritual home.
Yeah, just a side note here, which is quite ironic, Laith Maruf, is that Israel is going around trying to sell this so-called Iron Dome missile system to some of the Arab countries that they've so-called normalized with them. And it's that's beyond words when it's not working for them, that how that can work for these some of these Persian Gulf Arab countries.
Yeah, I mean, it shows you also how little control these vessels in the Gulf have of their money, because everybody knows how actually useless these weapons are. We already saw the war last year on Palestine and how useless these Israeli systems were in stopping the missiles of the resistance in Gaza. And still they're being forced to put money into it. I don't think they even have a choice. They're being told what to do. The other thing that we need to connect here is that, remember, during the war last year on Palestine, the resistance said that there was at least 8 different drones flying in over the whole battlefield of historic Palestine and monitoring all the movements of the Israeli army from the joint control room that included Hezbollah Islamic Jihad and Hamas from here, from Lebanon. So if during that 11-day war, the whole movement of the Zionists was monitored by 8 drones in the air all the time, and none of those drones were shot down except one, if we remember, at the end of the war, that means that it's game over in terms of the ability of the Zionists to do any movement on the ground without being targeted.
I'd like to capitalize on that a little bit. You did talk about it, say, Mohsen Abbas, the fact that there's no desire amongst Israeli soldiers. And this was kind of confirmed by this officer, Israeli officer, that made quite a stir within the Israeli media when he came out and said Israeli military not ready for war. And he mentioned the fact that the morale is very low. That's a whole other topic, I think, as to why the morale is low. But obviously, if we take a look at the different components of the army, if you have the weakened state of Israeli military capabilities along with an army that does not have the morale, then what are you left with in case there's a war?
Well, that's why I think Israel is doing everything it can to avoid war. What it wants to do is create a kind of an asymmetric war using the likes of the UAE, Saudi Arabia. They'd rather have a buffer zone, and they'd rather use what I term the Zio-Arabian monarchs to do their dirty work. But the reality is, in any war that Israel engages with the resistance, it's been proven already that Saudi Arabia and the likes of the UAE can't even take on Ansarullah and the force that exists there. And of course, Israel has its eye on the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's its real target. And what hope does Israel stand if it's going to rattle the tail of the Islamic Republic of Iran, given it can't even deal with those forces on the ground, which people call the proxies of Iran? In reality, they're resistance forces that have risen up indigenously. And it's also a reality that whether it's the Russians or the Iranians or others who are in the business of selling weapons, the Americans sell weapons as well, perfectly within their rights. But all of these resistance groups are faring rather well, I would say, in a toe-to-toe battle with the proxies of Israel. And that's exactly what Saudi Arabia is, and it's exactly what all of the other Arab monarchies are. It's really time for those monarchies, I think, to assess the partnerships that they're building up. They've seen very clearly that they can offer them very little protection. You can see that these days, with modern technological warfare as it is, just the example that you need to look at is the one in Nagorno-Karabakh and the way technology was used there. You can see that if you have this kind of technology, you can inflict absolutely a huge devastation very accurately. The Islamic Republic of Iran proved that with Ayn al-Assad as well, and the Americans and the Israelis know very well exactly what they're capable of. And I would say whatever Islamic Republic of Iran has, it's not too far in the distant future, and perhaps it already exists, that a reality will be that Hezbollah and Hamas will have exactly the same technology. Now, that is going to really put the cat amongst the pigeons, and the Israeli military men have to really reconsider exactly what any war would imply. And it may well be at some stage where the Palestinians just become so fed up with the kind of injustices that's gone on. Would you really blame them for going on an offensive war once that they are fully capable and loaded with all the necessary weaponry? I certainly wouldn't begrudge them after 70 years of the kind of injustice that Israel has inflicted. And certainly now, its military and its other capabilities are showing massive vulnerabilities.
Well, I'm sure that based on the last war, and since we saw the resistance factions inside Gaza to have increased not only the number of missiles, as I mentioned before, and its range, that they are on their path to obviously complete their arsenal and advance it, whether it's technologically or otherwise. But, you know, what's very interesting here, Laith Maruf, is when you take a look at Israel, and I'm trying to put things into context and then ask you to do that for us, really. We see Israel attack Syria, and we see Israel, without really thinking about the ramifications, attack Gaza. does Israel not put into its calculations that if the resistance factions or resistance groups out of Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Hamas, if they were to turn all, and then to mention Hezbollah, if they were to all turn against Israel, that Israel risks its own national security? Because, you know, it's doing that by attacking Syria.
Yeah, I mean, look, the problem that the Zionists have is the contradiction between their ideal in their head. They believe that they are supreme, that they are the chosen people, and the reality on the ground, which says that they're not, militarily speaking, right now specifically. So what does this mean? That means that their supremacy is contradicting with the assessment, military assessment that is given to them, which without direct American war against, for instance, the whole region in a next war, because we heard the Axis of Resistance leaders all speak after the last war on Palestine saying that they're ready to join in any next war to help. So we know that this is going to happen if there is another war in Palestine, and it surely will come very soon, looking at the situations on the ground. And so at the same time, we have to also realize that it may be not necessary that, you know, Iran, for instance, enter a next war in Palestine. Maybe the Palestinians will be by that point with just a few external helping hands, be able to liberate Palestine without the need for a regional war. And in terms of where we started this conversation, we mentioned the nukes of Israel. Those nukes are useless, honestly. They're just a shiny trophy on the shelf, because attacking Syria or Lebanon with nukes means nuclear fallout on the Zionist colony itself, and it means also targeting of the Muna reactor, which is blowing it up, is like blowing a nuke. So it's a mutual destruction. So there, you know, nukes we should not be worried about, and the liberation is coming soon.
Thank you for that. We're going to end it there. Laith Maruf from Beirut, activist and political commentator. Say Mohsen Abbas, a pleasure. Thank you for your input. Journalist and political commentator from London. And we had Mariam Saleh, correspondent at the top of the spotlight. And with that, we come to an end of this edition of the Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitaly, it's goodbye until next time.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Biden has become the third president to put royal ambitions before Yemeni lives. He and his officials should be held accountable for war crimes against Yemeni civilians, says Doug Bando, writer, in an article titled, Biden Administration Goes All In for Saudis and Emiratis. Stay tuned for more. Barely a year into the Biden administration, Riyadh and Abu Dhabi have captured U.S. West Asia region policy. President Joe Biden has abandoned the human rights principles he once claimed to hold dear. President Donald Trump also surrendered to the royals early, but never and Vince the slightest humanitarian concern about foreign policy. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, turned the administration's West Asia region portfolio over to the Saudis. Trump subsequently justified the sale of weapons as a massive jobs program, despite the thousands of people killed by those American bombs. After the murder of Saudi journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi, Trump acted like a mob consigliere dedicated to protecting Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman from justice. Better was expected of Biden. He sharply criticized MBS, promising to treat the latter as a pariah. Candidate Biden complained that Trump had written the Saudis a blank check. That seemed natural for a president who promised that human rights will be at the center of foreign policy. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia's human rights record is one of the worst on earth. The KSA comes in about 10 out of 210 countries and territories with 7 of 200 points in the Freedom House Freedom in the World ranking. That puts it in territory occupied by North Korea, Eritrea, Equatorial Guinea, Turkmenistan, and other bottom-feeding dictators. Explained Freedom House, Saudi Arabia's absolute monarchy restricts almost all political rights and civil liberties. No officials at the national level are elected. The regime relies on pervasive surveillance, the criminalization of dissent, appeals to sectarianism and ethnicity, and public spending supported by oil revenues to maintain power. Women and religious minorities face extensive discrimination in law and in practice. Working conditions for the large expatriate labor force are often exploitative. Reports by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Saudi human rights activists, and even the U.S. State Department tell a similar story. The United Arab Emirates also is rated not free, but comes in a bit higher at 17 points. Reported FH, limited elections are held for a federal advisory body, but political parties are banned, and all executive, legislative, and judicial authority ultimately rest with the 7 hereditary rulers. The civil liberties of both citizens and non-citizens, who make up an overwhelming majority of the population, are subject to significant restrictions. As President Biden promised to target U.S. support for the Yemen war, and for good reason, given the carnage resulting from 7 years of Saudi Emirati attacks on Yemeni civilians. The New York Times reported, year after year, the bombs fell on wedding tents, funeral halls, fishing boats, and a school bus, killing thousands of civilians and helping turn Yemen into the world's worst humanitarian crisis. In September, the UN group of eminent international and regional experts on Yemen issued its latest report. Since March 2015, over 23,000 airstrikes have been launched by the coalition in Yemen, killing or injuring over 18,000 civilians. Living in a country subjected to an average of 10 airstrikes per day has left millions feeling far from safe. According to the United Nations, UNICEF's Henrietta Fore reported that 2.6 million children are now internally displaced, deprived of healthcare, education, sanitation, and safe water. Yemen's gross domestic product, GDP, has dropped 40% since 2015, And despite the availability of food, 21 million people, including almost 11 million children, require humanitarian aid. The longer the conflict continues, the greater the harm. At risk, according to Martin Griffiths, UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator, are 5 million people are one step away from succumbing to famine and the diseases that go with it, and 10 million more are right behind them. A year ago, the president declared, "We are also stepping up our diplomacy to end the war in Yemen, a war which has created humanitarian and strategic catastrophe. This war has to end, and to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales." However, he exhibited dangerous confusion when promising to help Saudi Arabia and, by implication, the UAE, defend its sovereignty and its territorial integrity and its people. Yet, as noted earlier, Biden quickly adopted Trump's policy with his bizarre fealty to the West Asia region royals, destructive attack on the Yemeni people. What has been the consequence of Biden administration's embrace of the royal dictatorships? As the president passed his first anniversary in office, Saudi and Emirati attacks were up, killing even more civilians. Reported the Yemen Data Project, January 2022 was the most violent month in the Saudi-led air war in Yemen in more than 5 years. Yemen Data Project recorded 139 civilian deaths and 287 civilians injured in Saudi coalition airstrikes in January, taking the casualty toll to over 19,000 civilians killed and injured since Saudi Arabia launched its bombing campaign in Yemen in March 2015. Not since October 2016 have more civilian casualties been recorded in a single month in the air war. Saudi-led coalition airstrikes caused more civilian harm in the first month of 2022 than in the two previous years combined. Air raid numbers increased 60% month-to-month from 250 in December to 401 in January, the highest monthly rate since March 2018, and the fifth consecutive month of rising bombing numbers. Monthly air rates have more than doubled since the UN Human Rights Council GEE mandate ended on October 31st last year in a notable escalation in the conflict amid reduced accountability. The intensification of the bombing campaign in January included 2 air raids on hospitals, 2 water sites being bombed, 11 air raids on civilian vehicles, the bombing of a radio and TV station, a food truck, and a food storage unit. The U.S. should never have partnered with Saudi Arabia and UAE in their criminal attack on Yemen. The latter has suffered through violence most of its modern existence, but the U.S.-backed campaign multiplied the death and destruction visited upon the Yemeni people. Biden has become the third president to put royal ambitions before Yemeni lives. He and his officials should be held accountable for war crimes against Yemeni civilians.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.